Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Monday, December 17th. Governor John Hickenlooper is granting clemency to six men convicted of murder and sentenced to life without parole when they were juveniles or young adults. Capital Coverage reporter Scott Franz has the story.
Curtis Brooks was 15 when he joined a group of teenagers who tried to steal a car in 1995. One of the other teens shot and killed the driver, but Brooks was convicted of first-degree murder for his involvement. The U.S. Supreme Court has since ruled it's unconstitutional to give juveniles mandatory life sentences without parole. Brooks will be released July 1st. In a letter, Hickenlooper told Brooks he is, quote, a prime example of extraordinary rehabilitation. The other five men getting clemency now have the chance of parole. The outgoing governor is also pardoning 46 people for a range of crimes. I'm Scott Franz at the state capitol.
Water managers throughout the West were supposed to finish drought contingency plans for the Colorado River by the end of the year. And even with months of time and energy spent on the process, they're likely to miss that deadline. But why? Luke Runyon has more from the meeting of water managers in Las Vegas.
On stage in a gilded conference room at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Keith Moses says coming to terms with the limits of the Colorado River is like losing a loved one.
It reminds me of the seven stages of grief, because I think we've been in denial for a long time.
Moses is vice chairman of the Colorado River Indian Tribes, a group of four tribes near Parker, Arizona. The denial eventually turned to pain and then guilt as it became clear just how big the gaps were in supply and demand on the river. And for the last 6 months, water leaders in Arizona have been experiencing the third stage of grief, anger and bargaining.
Even though we reach situations where maybe we're about to all break out in a brawl in there, we come back to the table.
Moses is referring to a series of public meetings to hash out the details of drought contingency plans. Arizona has had a hard time agreeing on how to rein in water use and avoid seeing the river's largest reservoirs, Lakes Mead and Powell, drop to extremely low levels. Catherine Sorensen is director of Phoenix's water utility. She characterized the process this way.
Interesting, complicated, might one say difficult.
If arid conditions continue to plague the watershed like they have for the last 19 years, Sorensen says the state stands to lose a big portion of its Colorado River water. Just who takes those cuts and when is what needs to be figured out.
That's a painful conversation. And of course, everyone thinks that their own water use is justified and that no one else's is.
Hopefully you get some boots on or something.
One of the loudest voices in the debate comes from a small group of farmers in rural Pinal County, Arizona, south of Phoenix. They could see their supplies zeroed out within 2 years under current rules. Brian Rhodes doesn't want that to happen. He's the county's biggest grower. We're standing next to one of his alfalfa fields. It's being flooded by water carried in a concrete canal.
We're going to have to take large cuts. We all understand that.
Pinal farmers like Rhodes have been criticized for being the squeakiest wheel in getting the drought plans finished. He says that's unjustified.
The reason why Pinal County is fighting so hard on this is because it is so important. You know, we're just trying to survive.
The grieving, or drought planning, is much further along elsewhere. States in the river's upper basin, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Wyoming, have finished their deal. Amy Haas is the director of the Upper Colorado River Commission.
We need to act now. We're losing time.
Climate change is already stressing the Colorado River, reducing its flow and sapping its reservoirs that supply water for 40 million people. And projections from the federal government show it only getting worse.
We've got to be prepared to deal with changing conditions. And how do we adapt to those? I mean, I think that we didn't anticipate, certainly, what we're seeing today.
Water managers thought they had solved the problem 11 years ago with an agreement that was supposed to manage water shortages. John Weisheit was there when it was signed.
Everybody was quite excited, and I wasn't. I was kind of frowning.
Weisheit is with Living Rivers, a conservation group, and lives in Moab, Utah. He felt the much-touted plan didn't go far enough and would result in plummeting reservoirs.
So I'm still really concerned that there's going to be system failure in the Colorado River Basin.
Preventing that failure is the job of Brenda Berman, current commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. At the Vegas conference, she told water managers to skip ahead a few steps in the grieving process and get to acceptance.
Close isn't done. Only done will protect this basin. Today's level of risk is unacceptable, and the chance for crisis is far too high.
Berman set January 31st as the deadline to complete the plans. Without signed agreements, she says the federal government is prepared to step in and make the decision for them. I'm Luke Runyon in Las Vegas.
Conservation groups in Colorado and throughout the West welcomed the departure of Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, saying it could take years to reverse the damage to America's public lands during his time in office. Mark Richardson from the Colorado News Connection reports.
President Donald Trump announced Saturday that the former Navy SEAL and Montana congressman will leave his post by the end of the year amid ethics charges involving business deals, policy decisions, and travel arrangements. Despite high hopes that as a Westerner, Zinke would be sensitive to public lands protections, Aaron Weiss with the Center for Western Priorities thinks he'll be remembered as the most harmful Interior Secretary for public lands in the nation's history.
Secretary Zinke focused on slashing Bear's Ears by 3/4 and Grand Staircase Escalante by half. And that's going to be the legacy that he leaves behind, is this attempt not to stand up and protect public lands, but to open them up to oil and gas drilling.
White House sources said he was forced out of the job. Zinke is the fourth Trump cabinet member to resign under a cloud of suspicion. The most serious of more than a dozen accusations involves a land deal with the chairman of oil services mega firm Halliburton in Zinke's hometown of Whitefish, Montana, now under investigation by the Justice Department. Weiss says it isn't likely Zinke's successor will oppose more oil and gas leases, but he hopes there will be a better advocate for national parks and monuments.
You do need someone who's dedicated to protecting wildlife corridors, to acknowledging there are some places that are too precious to drill, and that your job as a steward of America's public lands is to ensure the best possible return for taxpayers rather than leasing all of these acres.
Weiss doesn't think there'll be much improvement in the short term, as former oil and gas lobbyist David Bernhardt, Interior's deputy secretary, will likely be named interim director.
For as cartoonishly awful as Ryan Zinke was, David Bernhardt is smarter and much more low profile. So we fully expect him to continue these policies, but without the laughable public face that Secretary Zinke brought with him to the job.
The Denver-based Center for Western Priorities is a nonprofit group that advocates for balanced conservation and energy practices in the West. For Colorado News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Monday, December 17th. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.